one of the things that it seems like is kind of big in the pelvic floor world is that transverse abdominis contraction. And a lot of the research shows that the isolated transverse abdominis contraction is not actually helpful in the long run, but like getting people back into like complex movements is the end all be all. Do you do a lot of isolated transverse abdominis?
I don't really do isolated anything because our bodies don't work that way.
This is Maestro on the Mic, a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. I'm going to apologize in advance for my voice. I just got back from Hawaii, and believe it or not, I managed to get sick. It's pretty wet there, and I guess, I don't know, got the best of me. So please bear with me. I will try my best to not have a coughing fit in the middle of recording this. So today's episode is a little bit different. We're doing some virtual Zencaster podcasting, and I've got Tristan Fail on the line with me. She is a physiotherapist out of South Carolina. She's a little bit of a newbie to the game, which is awesome. And what happened was we connected via social media. I'll tell you about how that happened, but she had some questions about pelvic floor, and I said, hold up, instead of emailing me questions, how about we do a podcast, because I'm sure that other people would like to hear those answers and probably have the same kind of questions. And also, she has a bit of a cool backstory. She's done a residency. She took the OCS. So you get some perspective on that, right? So without further ado, Miss Tristan, welcome to Maestro on the Mic.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I love that accent too. That's fantastic.
Don't
apologize, like the best. So why don't I let you give your backstory. Where are you from? What are you doing? How come PT? Tell it to us.
All right. So I'm from a tiny town in South Carolina called Lancaster, and it's in absolutely middle of nowhere. There's a Walmart. You go to the Walmart parking lot, and that's all there is to do in Lancaster. And so I graduated from the University of South Carolina. So I don't know how you feel about the other USC, but the other USC. With my PT degree in December of 2016. So I took my first job at Vertex Physical Therapy doing outpatient orthopedics for a private clinic. The reason I got into physical therapy is because I was playing softball in college. I was a third baseman in a D2 school here in South Carolina, and I tore my ACL rounding second base. So I went through the PT for that, which is actually super easy when you're 18 years old and you don't really care about anything.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, and because I did it again in PT school where things mattered, and it was a lot harder.
You're a two-time repeat offender.
Oh, I'm actually a bilateral. I'm not just a repeat offender. I'm a bilateral.
Jeez Louise. All right, so fun. All right.
Yeah, so then that's kind of how I got into physical therapy, because I was trying to decide what I wanted to do. And honestly, going into college, I was like, I'd rather work with trees. I know I want to do biology, but I don't want to work with people.
Love
and
it.
Then I ended up in the one-on-one for an hour career. So
yeah.
I don't know how that happened. But I was like, do I want to be a PT? Do I want to be a surgeon? Do I want to be an orthopedist? Because I kind of like that there aren't very many female orthopedic surgeons.
Yeah.
Or what do I want to do? And I ended up in physical therapy, I think mainly because I didn't want to spend 13 years learning in school.
Exactly.
And so here I am. But I think that the amount of time I get to spend with people makes it worth it, and getting to see people progress, not just from your like POD1, like, but from that day on the entire way, and not just at 6 weeks and 12 weeks is kind of worth it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's so funny. You and I have similar backstories with, I think a lot of us do. I was the ACL when I was early high school, not a repeat offender. Once was enough. And then I was like, this is pretty terrible. And then I had the same thing going in, thinking about orthopedic surgery, but I was like, do I really want to be in school for the rest of my life and in the boys club and kind of very similar sentiments. So we have that definitely shared. I think a lot of people out there do have kind of the same thing.
I think it's funny how PTs do that in general, though. Like, it's like most of us have had some sort of injury and that's what drives us into it.
Absolutely. And then you tend to kind of develop a soft spot or an interest for those kind of things. At least initially I did. I know. And for me, it was definitely, I was interested in kind of knees and more the sports stuff. And then I hurt my back really bad in PT school. And after that, I developed a soft spot for low back pain patients, SI joint patients. Once I figured out how to treat it in the beginning, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. But after that, I definitely developed it. And that's actually my favorite thing to treat right now. I absolutely love it. But I mean, we tend to gravitate towards what affects us in some way, shape, or form. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Could you just tell the folks a little bit, because I think it's really fascinating, that you, about your residency and that?
Yeah. So the reason behind the residency is because in my second year of PT school, I was working on Fort Jackson, which is the training base here in Columbia. I was working retail, but I was on the base all the time. And I was like, God, you know what? I kind of might like the military lifestyle, like having somebody that's got your back all the time, people that have like deadlines and stuff. That might kind of be where I need to go. And so, because I was already in my second year, the time it would have taken me to like go to the Army Baylor program would have been like a ridiculous amount of time in school and I already had loans. So I was like, I'm gonna finish this out. I'm gonna try to get into, and I decided the Navy on my own. And to be able to do that, I had to have an orthopedic residency under my belt for the most part to make yourself competitive.
Gotcha.
So, and I wanted it as soon as possible. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to wait the 2 years to get my 2000 hours. I want to get this in 1 year. And I got in with the evidence in motion people who actually let me start my residency before I had taken my board exams. Yeah. And so I started it and then I took my board exams. I passed, thank God. And then I continued on with the residency at Vertex under Brandon Vaughn as my mentor.
Oh, he's so good.
He is.
He's so good.
I learned a lot.
So the whole staff. So I wanted you to just to talk about it because people ask me about the OCS and the residency. And I didn't do residency. I got my OCS. I studied on my own. I have mixed feelings about residencies, but I really like the way that you did it. And I can get behind that where it's not this whole super delayed long thing afterwards. And also it seems like it was very much driven by your own decision. I don't really love when I feel like I hear from some students that they're, you know, professors are really just driving that decision. And sometimes I wonder how, if these professors are actually practicing or what. And so I like that story. I think that there is a path for everyone. It wasn't the right one for me, but I was, when you said that before we started recording that you had done the residency, got in before and use that for your OCS. I think that's awesome. I think it's important to put out there so that people can hear different paths. And if it's okay with you, I'd love to put your, just kind of whatever contact info you want, I'll put it in the show notes. And this way, if folks listening to this have questions, they can direct them towards you because Lord knows I can't answer those.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm good with that. I also don't think it's for everybody. I think that it definitely did help me with preparing for the OCS because it wasn't just like, I probably started studying in October. So it wasn't just those 4 months of time that I was studying all the information that it was going to take to be able to sit for that exam. It was like that entire year. So it wasn't until I sat and took the test that I was like, oh, I've been studying this for a year. This actually isn't that bad.
No, totally. And definitely, I mean, having met Brandon and the staff at Vertex, that is the kind of place that you want to be continuing to do your hours. That's where I think I get skeptical because you never know what you're going to get into. And you could end up with a mentor, whatever, I don't know what they're called, advisor, clinical advisor, whatever it's called, that you kind of that may be short-sighted or very one-dimensional, and then you're just learning their model. But I'm very confident with the folks at Vertex. And for those of you out there, just to complete that circle, I actually met Tristan or got connected with Tristan because of a young man named Kyle with a last name I can't pronounce. Thibodeau, I want to say. Thibodeau. There's like silent letters. There's an X in there. It's a lot. So Kyle, really outgoing young guy, he came and sat and chatted with me at CSM 2 years ago when it was in San Antonio. And he had been following me on social media and we just sat and chatted and rapped. And he is an awesome dude. And he said, you know, once I graduate and I start working, I would love for you to come to my clinic and teach a course. Fast forward, he graduated, he passed his boards, he was practicing, and I had a course at his clinic. And then not too long ago, I put an Instagram story up that was asking for anyone who had contacts that were going to be at SCAPTA, which I'm going to be at this weekend. And lo and behold, Kyle had reached out and said, hey, I have someone. My friend Tristan's going to be there. And now here we are doing an awesome podcast. All right, social media is incredible.
You're the only reason I'm going to SCAPTA is to find out if I won vice president or not. That's the major reason I'm going.
So you had written that in that email and I was like so confused. I was like, she's going, but then wait, she's so like you're like a bit going to be a big deal. Like why would you want to?
I'm not even going to see incumbent though. Like, so I don't know.
Why did you, I'm not a joiner. I'm not going to lie. So what pushed you to want to join and be VP? For those of you who don't know, okay. First of all, can you say what SCAPTA is for those people that don't know what it is and then why?
Yeah, it's the South Carolina American Physical Therapy Association chapter.
Yeah, that's a big deal. The whole state.
Yeah, so what happened was do you know what Orange Theory is? I don't know if it's.
We have it here.
Hit its way out there. I assume it's everywhere. I don't know why I said that because we usually don't get things first.
It's a fair question. So for those who don't know, Orange Theory is like a high intensity interval training workout paradigm. It's orange and it talks about being in the orange zone. It's a workout paradigm that is in a lot of places. I can't say that it's everywhere, but it is in a lot of places. So go ahead. Sorry.
They were doing... I think it was a weight loss challenge. And so I went in and I was like, hey, I'm Tristan. Here are all these things about recovery. This is how you do mobility. This is what an injury looks like. This is when you should stop because of pain. And I probably went on a tangent about how just having arthritis doesn't mean that you should have surgery. Yes. I do that a lot. And then somebody that worked at DHEC came up to me afterwards and was like, hey, I've been trying to get this grant to the this like the APTA chapter in South Carolina. I haven't really gotten any responses. Is there any way that you guys could maybe like you could maybe contact them or maybe we could get this in your clinic? Mm-hmm. And it's the Walk with Ease grant is what it was. And so I contacted SCAPTA and what I decided to do was to just make sure I wanted to also put one in for my clinic as an individual. And so SCAPTA didn't end up putting in a grant proposal for it. And I did. So I got it. And I was the first individual clinic to get that grant before they opened it up to other individual clinics. So that was really cool. But it was like that process that was kind of like, and we lost POPs. It's still a hard thing for me.
You lost what?
Losing like the, we lost the POPs legislature. So we lost the physician owned physical therapy practice laws that said that you can't have those.
So you can have them
state.
There, you're saying.
So now you can have physician-owned practices. So like all that kind of stuff, it was like, maybe I can make a change and maybe I can make a difference if I actually like join into it. Dude, so that was,
this is awesome to hear. So I'm learning at the same time that you guys are learning. I wanted this call to be as authentic and organic as possible. So I was like, Tristan, don't send me all background stuff. Like, let's just talk and it'll come out as we go. And this is awesome. You are a mover and a shaker. I am like the most anti-APTA joiner kind of person. And it is awesome to talk to someone who's passionate about it. And this is honestly how change is going to get made, is by people like you, you know, coming from the inside and making moves. So thank you for what you're doing, because Lord knows I won't do it. And everyone out there, I'm sure they're also thanking you, because that's a big deal. So I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of them are clinicians. Like most of the people that work in APTA aren't clinicians anymore. So like that piece of like the world isn't really fit.
Well, that's interesting to know. Huh.
I mean, I don't know if that's true everywhere.
Yeah, but
don't quote me.
I
on
won't
that.
Quote you, but the fact that that's even something is something that that's something to think about. So for those of you out there listening, you want to make a change, you got to join something in some way. Do something. For me, it's talking to people. Tristan's actually going into the trenches. Do something. besides just complaining about it, right? If you don't like something, do something to change it, or honestly, shut up, because complaining never got anybody anywhere, right? Got to make moves. So let's move forward and let's talk pelvic, or maybe I should say, let's move downward and let's talk pelvic floor.
All right. So what got you into pelvic floor? Was it the whole, like, I want to treat an athlete as a whole concept?
No, actually. What got me into pelvic floor was that I was a bit bored. So we were exposed to it in pelvic floor physical therapy, I should say, in grad school. I went to NYU and they have a whole section. They bring in models. You do pelvic floor exam. It's like a whole thing. And that really kind of opened my eyes to it. And I was like, this is something that seems pretty cool. But I knew that coming right out of school, I was not ready for it. I had two good friends who went directly into women's health, pelvic floor, physical therapy. And so I always had kind of in the back of my mind and my finger on the pulse somewhat via them. And then basically 2 years after I graduated, I was ready to quit PT and hated everything and was looking for something new. And there was a clinic in the financial district that was in New York. There's a clinical financial district that specialized in it. And I was like, I have wanted to do this. I think now is the time because I can go and learn more. And so I went into it just because I wanted to learn more and want something new. And then in doing so, I learned exactly what you just said, like how integral it is if you want to treat the entire person, the entire human, the entire athlete. It's a gross oversight that it's taught so divorced from the rest of the body. You know, there's a lot of taboo surrounding it, and it's the bottom of your core. It's part of everything. We all have one, and we're seeing that, you know, it's coming around, more baby steps. But that's what got me into it. I wanted to learn something new. What about you?
The exact opposite.
I love it.
So when we had somebody come into class, so we don't have like a pelvic floor therapist at the University of South Carolina per se, that like, or at the time we didn't. And so they had people from the community come in and teach, kind of like an adjunct instructor. And so when she came in, I was like, nah, this isn't, that's not for me. I don't want to do that. Nah. Can't imagine doing that ever. And then I got into clinic, and because I'm the only female in the clinic, people are more likely to talk to me, especially the other women. And so there would be stories they'd be telling me about, like, not being able to make it to the bathroom in the morning, but it's okay because there's this on the floor and stuff like that. And it's like, that's not normal. I don't think you should be doing that. And then it was like, still like, oh, I don't know if I still want to do it. Maybe I'll just refer out. And there aren't very many pelvic floor therapists in Columbia, South Carolina, which is where we practice. And so I was like, God, maybe there actually is like a need.
Which, or anywhere. That's the issue. There's not. It's crazy because, in some of the bigger cities and such, there's more. But at the end of the day, it's really such a glaring hole. In terms of population. So sorry to interrupt.
And then the education is not there, that you like have it, like that someone, or that it's a problem because people still think that's normal
exactly.
for some reason.
And common, not normal. Common, not normal. Once again, common, not normal. And what we're talking about here is the big one is stress and urinary incontinence, or when you're doing double unders, you're doing kind of sports and there's leakage. That is common. That is not normal. You know, there's a whole nother realm of pelvic floor physical therapy dealing with like pain with sex, pain with sitting, things like that. Not as common, but still very much not normal. These are things that there is help for, and folks like Tristan are out there working on it. So you got interested in it, and then because you were like, hey, this is not normal, and.
Yeah, that's not normal. So then I was like, maybe I'll take a class because I feel like that's something pretty intimate that I shouldn't just try to willy-nilly figure out on my own.
More or less, yes.
And then like looking into the class, it was you had to do like the lab components. You're also an example. And then I was like, never mind. All right, I'm out again. Like, I can't do that. I'm not going to.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
That stopped me for 2 years. That same thing.
Yeah, I was like, that's a lot of eyes. You know what I mean? And then I just, for some reason, I got over it. I was like, you know what? Like, I think that it'll be like looking at a shoulder eventually. I think that I can get through it. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to buck up and do it. And so I signed up for a course. I actually signed up for one in Bayshore, New York. And then I was like, maybe I don't want to go to New York in the wintertime when I don't own jackets.
Smart girl.
So I looked and there was one in Charlotte and I was like, oh, perfect. Yay. It's like an hour away from my home. So I did it. I did it there with Herman and Wallace.
Gotcha. Institute. So Herman and Wallace, I'll also put that in the show notes. That is who I went through for the courses that I took. That's when people ask me, like, hey, what do you recommend for pelvic floor courses? That is always my go-to. I know the APTA does some courses, but I've heard the best reviews about Herman and Wallace. And actually through that, I met the incredible Tracy Scher. Last name is S-H-E-R. I'll put that also in the show notes. She is an incredible resource when it comes to the pelvic floor. And she's an instructor for them, teacher for them. She has a bunch of her own courses now, but that is my go-to. And seemingly that will be Tristan, I'm looking at these million notes here. That would be Tristan's go-to for recommendations for pelvic floor courses. So you took the course and then what?
Took the course and then, in it, I've never been really good at, like role playing. Yeah. Like if you're like, oh, okay, Tristan, let's pretend like you're this patient or I'm this patient. I've never been really good at that. Towards the end of that course, you had to do like a full exam on whichever partner you chose. And so I was like, that girl was she seemed really uncomfortable and somehow her being uncomfortable made me kind of step up. And so in that and like having to step up and like having to talk her through my exam and then going through like her exam afterwards, I just realized that I was actually comfortable with this. And so, then I brought it back and then I took the OCS exam cause that was February. I took the OCS exam in March and then I actually started treating a little bit beforehand, but then now I'm really going to start, kind of like marketing myself to, your gynecologist or gynecologist in the area.
Good girl. So a few things with that. One, I always recommend whenever I have students that are even thinking about going into pelvic physical therapy, if they're at all, it takes a lot of soft skills to be good at pelvic floor physical therapy because like you said, there is this air of weirdness about it. And if you are able to make that patient comfortable, that is the number one thing because there's huge emotional ties to this body part, obviously. And so we do it, you know, in some regards want to make them feel like they're just talking about their shoulder, you know? So that's a huge lesson that actually you learned right within the class. And it was amazing you could step up in that role because any students that I have that I see, they have that comfort with patients, that realness, and they can just talk to them like humans. That is one of the most important skills, if not probably the most important skill set when it comes to pelvic floor physical therapy, right? The soft skills. Can you relate to this person? Does this person want to trust you? Because you need that with any treatment, with anything, but it is paramount with pelvic floor physical therapy. And then you were talking about kind of treating beforehand. And actually, that's the route I took too. And I don't think it's a bad thing. So I was in Duffy and Bracken physical therapy in New York. And the owner is a pelvic floor physical therapist. And so I studied under her for a little bit before I took the course. And I actually think I got more out of it, more out of the course, because you go in actually understanding some of the stuff that they're talking about and having seen some stuff. And then you can be like, oh, okay, that's what's going on. You know, I don't recommend people having like a full caseload of pelvic floor dysfunction without any kind of background, but it was definitely helpful for me having had my then mentor, Anne, allow me to see patients, with her. And then you kind of go in with some sort of framework and some sort of reference point. Those would be my recommendations and kind of my take homes from those two things. So totally awesome.
I'm sorry. I did a similar thing. So like I was, before I signed up for the course, I was like, maybe I should go see what this looks like in real life. And so, I went up to Greenville and Jenna Sires let me hang out with her and in her clinic and like all of her patients were really cool with it. And I saw men and women. Right now I really only want to treat women. Mm-hmm. So I don't call it, we call it women's health at Vertex. We don't call it pelvic floor just because I don't have the qualifications to treat men and I don't want to just, again, willy-nilly try to figure that out. But she kind of let me sit on both of those. So like I had a good idea of not necessarily what an eval looks like, because I didn't see an eval, but like the treatments and what she was doing and why she was doing it before I went.
Absolutely. That makes a big difference. I like that you made the distinction too. I treated men. I don't do as much pelvic floor now, but I treated men and women. And I think it's important for us to say pelvic floor physical therapy. Like if you're treating exclusively women, then yes, say women's health. But when that changes, because it will, because you're going to be amazing at what you do, just so you know, it's important to say, you know, pelvic floor physical therapy, and listen when you're talking about it in general, because I think that we need to do whatever we can, whether that starts with just the verbiage that we're using, to make it more of a commonplace discussion, because it's just so much surrounding it is because it's taboo, and then people don't talk about this, that they don't talk about it, they don't get treated. But I actually, I'm not going to lie, found that it was a little bit easier to treat the male patients than the female patients. Just my experience with what they came in with. And I'm sure every physical therapist is going to have a different opinion and experience. But at some point, if you, Tristan, do feel comfortable with that, I would highly recommend it. It's because what you're doing is invaluable and so many people need it. And some of the times it's crazy because you see it in our traditional orthopedic setting where someone comes in with something that was pretty simple to, you know, quote unquote, fix with them, but they just never had the right guidance. And you see that too with pelvic floor physical therapy, where sometimes, you know, these dudes come in, females come in, and they have these issues that you're like, I can help you, and there's help for this, and it's actually, you know, fairly simple, and you don't have to suffer for years and years like you have been. So I commend you with what you're doing, and when you're ready, I encourage you strongly to open that up to seeing the dudes also. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing.
I'll look into it. They say that men actually need more help pelvic floor wise because like women have so many people they can go to. Like you have your OB, you have your urogynecologist, but like men don't really have anybody they can go
to. Absolutely. A lot of time what you're going to see is they can come back with a diagnosis of bacterial prostatitis. That's like the overarching theme. Like, oh, you have some dysfunction, you have some pain, you have bacterial prostatitis. And then they go on antibiotics and they get better for a little bit. Because that like the anti-inflammatory component of things, but nothing, it comes back because that's not what they have. And you're right. There is not the same kind of outlet, or it's not as publicized, even though women's health is so grossly under-publicized, so is men's health. That's pelvic floor health. Yeah. So when you're ready to cross that bridge, do it. That you will help many, 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 many people, especially within that orthopedic or I shouldn't say orthopedic, within that functional fitness world, CrossFit, lifting, you know, those dudes have issues too. My good friend Julie Weeb actually talks about it and uses the word sharding. You see these male lifters and it's, yes, females tend to have stressed urinary incontinence, but if you're a dude and you catch a heavy clean in the bottom and something happens that we call a shart, that is a sign, symptom, indicator of pelvic floor dysfunction. So at all levels, we can see these kinds of things happening. Yeah, we typically don't see men dealing with the same kind of stress urinary incontinence, mainly because of the anatomy. Their urethra is much longer, and so just that pressure system is a little bit different. But they can have issues too, so something to think about.
Do you want to take a course with the maestro? Head on over to www.themovementmaestro.com/workshops to find a course near you. Don't see one in your area? Use the contact button at the top of the page to hit up the maestro and talk about setting up a course near you. One more time for the folks in the back, that's www.themovementmaestro.com. maestro.com/workshops. We'll see you there.
And now back to Maestro on the Mic.
So any questions, because this was like, I guess what our original call was about, but I could talk forever, but any questions beside, you know, down this road of pelvic floor?
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, I don't want to phrase this incorrectly, but like in the Herman Wallace course, it's about like, how do you start people off? And one of the things that it seems like is kind of big in the pelvic floor world is that transverse abdominis contraction. And a lot of the research shows that the isolated transverse abdominis contraction is not actually helpful in the long run, but like getting people back into like complex movements is the end all be all. Do you do a lot of isolated transverse abdominis?
I don't really do isolated anything because our bodies don't work that way. So no. And this has been an evolution for me. When I first started pelvic floor physical therapy, and it's part of growth. When I first started doing pelvic floor physical therapy, I think that I treated the pelvic floor the same way that people originally treated the knee when they were treating patellofemoral pain syndrome, where they just looked at the knee. They were like, this person's knee hurts. I'm just going to look at their knee. And then I went into the pelvic floor world and I was like, this person has pelvic floor dysfunction. I'm going to treat the pelvic floor and look at the pelvic floor and quote unquote release tissues there and do biofeedback and hope this person gets better. And then it became an evolution and more learning. And a lot of what I started working on with people to start off with was proper breathing mechanics and pressurization mechanics. And a resource for that, a great resource for that is the woman I just said, Julie Wiebe. I'll put her name in the show notes. Her big baby is piston breathing, and she's an incredible resource when it comes to all things physical therapy, but really with the pelvic floor and breathing and bracing, and whether it's peripartum, perinatal, postpartum, whatever, all of it. Because that is a big thing. I think that in some instances, the pelvic floor is the symptom, not the cause. And we see incontinence not because the pelvic floor has a problem necessarily, but because that person may have a bracing or pressurization issue, especially in that young population that hasn't had any kids or anything like that. Like, yeah, you have a vaginal delivery. You've had trauma to that area. Absolutely. You carry that baby for 40 weeks and then you birth that child. But when it comes to people that haven't had kids, there's not necessarily any trauma there. And it can be that the pelvic floor dysfunction is a symptom, not a cause. So I have really shifted a lot of my treatment. And the first thing I work on with people is going to be breathing and kind of positional strategies. To make them aware of things. And then we can go, because, you know, I think the Kegel, however you want to pronounce it, gets a bad rap also. And there's a time and a place for it. But it has to be understood that it's not the be-all, end-all. Similar to, let's, you know, use that knee again. The quad sets, there's a time and a place for them. Right? They're not the be-all, end-all, but, you know, you just had surgery, maybe you're trying to get something firing, figure things out. Like, I can justify using them. And so, yeah, the same kind of concept. I can justify using a Kegel, but it's going to be in the context of a more functional pattern for things with breathing strategies, more global integration of things. If the person's really struggling to kind of find the TA, I could do some stuff with that, but I still prefer to make it more contextual and more functional.
Right. And they're doing a birth fit summit, I think is what it is. And it was like a free thing. So I signed up for it. Cause I was like, if it's free, it's for me. Yeah. And I should probably learn some of this
stuff. I love it.
So Julie Wiebe was just on there, and what she was talking about, in their interviews. So, in her interview, one was like different running forms with, postpartum and pregnancy. But the other part was that she tests it in standing and like pelvic floor, and she's a external. So she doesn't do any of the internal stuff. But like she tests it in standing, and that's not something that we like talked about it in that Herman and Wallace class, like, from supine to standing, but she was saying she always starts in standing first. So is that something that you also do?
I'm going to say it depends. There's never an always with me. I'll never admit to doing anything always. It depends. I think that it's a matter of testing something functionally. Yeah. Get them in a functional position. So upright. But then when I'm going to start trying to reintegrate things, you may need to put them in different positions so that they can actually, even though I don't like to do things isolated, so they can at least start to feel certain things and figure things out. So that's across any treatment I do. You want to regress or reduce the postures so that the person can succeed and is in a developmentally appropriate position so that, the nervous system feels safe so that they can figure out what the heck they're doing. And then as quickly as we can, we progress them to those more functional positions. Obviously, she's talking about running, we have to get that person upright ultimately for their training, because they don't run on their back. So that's another thing that I saw as faulty, you know, some of the original treatments I did is that people are laying down on their back and they can do this stuff. But then it's like, yeah, stand up with gravity and actually hold, you know, hold that baby that you just had while you're doing this and all this stress that's added to the system. So I need to see that I will not, let's say, I will not initially treat them perhaps in that position, but yeah, let's test them in multiple positions, see where they're at. And then we must ultimately progress to having them in that position because that's where they're trying to function for sure.
And that makes sense too. And I think one of the things she was saying was that in standing, they have a proprioceptive input from gravity. Yes. And so sometimes it can be easier to connect like brain body.
Totally.
With that, but totally. I just didn't know, because that's not something like, I think I've been testing it mainly in supine every time, and internal with the people that are cool with it, obviously not the people that are not cool with it. But I just didn't know kind of like where your standpoint was.
I would say try to get as much information as you can and, you know, see where the patient's at. It depends on the goals that they have. And then I always want to, I would say it depends. And my answer is typically and, not or. Do both. The main thing, I think that's a big take home from that is that I love that you're even thinking about that. That's huge because a lot of people are even thinking about, hey, what about this other position, this other way of testing? I have no set definite, I always do this, but I will definitely do my best to make everything as functional as possible because that's where you're going to see their dysfunction. We're going to see, and that's ultimately what we're looking to get them back to. So there's my, that would be my answer on that.
Yeah, it's a good answer.
I appreciate that. Any next question? Fire away.
Yes. All right. Bar path in pregnancy. Because that's So I'm a new CrossFitter.
Yeah.
So I just started, God, what was it? Probably like July of last year is like when I started doing CrossFit. And I never wanted to drink the Kool-Aid. Uh-huh. That was like never
but
what I wanted.
But it tastes so good.
But it does actually taste so good.
It does.
But I wanted to learn Olympic lifts with somebody like maybe watching me.
That's true. Smart.
And so that's how I ended up there. And I wanted to make friends.
Yeah.
So, that's how I ended up at CrossFit. And so one of the things that like through not one, because I had Brandon as a mentor, I understand like the bar path principles when you're trying to do Olympic lifts. But through that, it kind of made me started wondering about with pregnancy, because like in early stages, your body's not necessarily going to change as much, but like with later stages, how do you get through a clean or a snatch if you have that big old belly?
So for those of you out there who don't know what bar path is, we're talking about weightlifting, particularly Olympic weightlifting, which is going to be your clean and jerk, your snatch. Funny, we're talking about pelvic floor also. But we're talking about the path that the barbell takes when you're performing that lift. And it's simple physics here. You want to keep the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So you want that bar path to be nice and straight, and you want to keep the bar as close to you as you can, because as that bar moves away from you, that's going to increase that lever arm. And that's more force and more that you have to work against. So when you're not pregnant, it's going to be a bit easier to keep that bar close to you. When you are pregnant and you start to show and your belly gets bigger, suddenly that bar path is going to suffer. And then the question was, you know, what do you do about that? How do we coach that, or what do we do? And that's going to be a case-by-case, a case-by-case thing. So the bar path is going to suffer. But ideally what we're looking to do is put the mom's health and what she's feeling at number one. So the weight that she's lifting is going to go down. And what we're going to be focusing on the whole entire time is quality of movement and how she feels and what that her body is doing. Brianna Battles, you follow her? You have to take anything with her by any chance?
I do actually. I follow her.
Brianna Battles, that's another resource I'll put in the show notes. Amazing reference for this, amazing resource for this. She's had her second kid. She went through the first kid, kind of just went with what was out there, not the best information, and had a really big diastasis and kind of had some issues. Has since had a second child, had a diastasis this round, because it happens, but it was just everything so much more well managed. She is a personal trainer. She's extensive knowledge on this, and just helping people through their pregnancy and then get back. Her biggest, or I think probably the biggest name associated with her is going to be Lindsay Valenzuela. For those of you out there that are CrossFitters, you know, Lindsay Valenzuela got back to regionals 1 year after having her kid, and she had a tremendously difficult pregnancy. So there are steps to be taken, and Brianna's a huge proponent, advocate for taking the right steps, taking cautious steps, and listening to your body and realizing that it's not about like, oh, how fast can I get back to CrossFit or how much can I lift while I'm pregnant? It's about realizing that postpartum, as she says, postpartum is forever. Right? It doesn't go away. And so things have changed. And so while that person is pregnant, we're going to listen to their body. And Bar Path, like we said, is going to suffer. We try to keep it closed, but it's going to suffer. And then eventually that person may not be able to do a barbell anymore. And then that's cool. They go to dumbbells. The movement pattern remains the same. The quality of the motion remains the same. And then ultimately, you know, it's just the mom's health, the mom's well-being, the mom's physical state that's going to determine how they progress all of those, everything. But the same standards remain going through the pregnancy. Try to keep the barbell close. Obviously, we're going to suffer at some point. And then maybe it becomes a matter of pulling from the blocks. For those of you, that means that we're not bending all the way over. We're pulling from a higher surface, starting at a higher surface, and then it's a totally different movement. Once we can't do it anymore, all right, cool, different movement. I'm not here to shame any moms who lift throughout their whole pregnancy, because I've seen it and they've been fine. It's going to be very much a case-by-case basis. That's one of the things that I see too much on social media, that there's like a lot of mom shaming, a lot of active mom shaming, where it's like the pendulum goes too far, where it's either like they're pushing these women to do crazy things or they're getting shamed for doing crazy things. And it's kind of like, let that woman listen to her body. Let's get her the right resources. And then we go from there.
Yeah. It's like whatever the Instagram post was with the woman with the diastasis.
Yes.
She was doing, what was it? Muscle ups, mm-hmm. bar muscle ups. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that was a lot of shaming
so
going
much.
On for her.
So
yeah.
Much. And it's like, there's a better way to handle this. It was Christy, right? Christy, someone or other had the,
and I can't remember because I didn't really do the open anyway.
Yeah. So I was all right. So, I'm trying to remember which athlete it was, but if you follow CrossFit, you follow these athletes, you see it, it's out there. And then there's a lot of shaming that goes on. Flip side, there's way too much supporting of people who pee their pants. Crazy.
Oh my gosh, the video,
yes.
The CrossFit video. She's like, I'm a gynecologist. And if you pee yourself, you're trying
yes.
hard.
Crazy.
What?
Crazy, crazy. And, you know, we see Julie Weeb leading the charge with that and respectfully leading the charge. It is crazy. We are shaming these moms for working out, and then we're commending these people for peeing their pants. And we're like, where is the middle ground here, my friends? So, yes, don't shame people. Stress urinary incontinence. Common, absolutely not normal. So you really shouldn't cheer that on. And bar path, try to keep the bar as close as you can, keep the mom safe. And then eventually you'll probably switch into a different kind of modality altogether, where perhaps it's dumbbells and another thing, so that there's not as much stress going through that human body.
Yeah, because the pelvic floor dissipates a lot of your stress anyways,
yes.
right? Like a lot of the forces that have to go through your body
yeah.
are going to go through the pelvic floor.
Exactly.
And it makes sense with CrossFit being scalable to be able to pull it away from where a bar doesn't have to go past your stomach.
Exactly. That's the main thing with CrossFit. You know, we said that the Kool-Aid tastes so good. It does. I mean, it's done right. It does taste so good. And that's one of the best parts about CrossFit, is that it may not be for everyone, but it is 100% scalable, modifiable for anyone. Absolutely. As long as you have a good coach.
All right, let's talk about rock tape in the pelvic floor.
Boom, let's talk about it. You just use the big daddy tape and you tape it all up. No, don't do that.
That's what I thought was funny. Because I was just imagining it, and then like, how would that work?
Yeah.
It wouldn't.
And that, don't do that.
But do you use, like, because if you treat the whole body, then I can imagine you'd be using rock tape for like something like back pain or something like that, just to change the neural input mm-hmm. and the neural firing for the muscles. Have you ever used it for like adductors
yes,
or?
That's exactly it. So when it comes to pelvic floor dysfunction, when it comes to pregnancy, those are the main areas that I'm taping. I can do a pregnancy sling, belly bracing, if you will. That helps out. They love that. I'll eventually usually switch to Rock Tape RX. That's our more gentle tape, because that skin is stretched and it's sensitive, and our adhesive can be a lot. But as it relates to the pelvic floor, the main thing that I'm looking to do, if I'm going to tape anything, and if I have taped anything in the past, which is not a lot when it comes to the pelvic floor, it's typically the adductors. Or if they had a C-section scar, I'm taping over that. Or if they're still pregnant, I can tape the abdomen, or if they have a diastasis, I can tape to help with kind of reminding them for better cueing, better firing of tissues. But as relates to kind of the nether regions, it's just the adductors that I tape. That's it. I've actually done some sacral taping, because with pelvic floor dysfunction, sometimes you have people come in with coccyx pain. That is a part of pelvic floor dysfunction. And also do some taping kind of into that area that I've had some success with. But yeah, there's no tape going kind of anywhere else south of the border.
It wouldn't stick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So I think my last question for you is, I'm a newbie to the pelvic floor stuff, right? But I still already have patients coming in. And the majority of what I'm treating right now is mainly prolapse. Actually, it's not. I thought I was going to get into this for incontinence, and I'm actually more in prolapse. But they come in, and the OB kind of told them that they're going to have to like stick something up in their vagina, yeah, whether it be a dilator or an egg, and like walk around the clinic, yeah, with weights attached to that.
Yeah.
So have you had that? Like, that seems like, it's, yeah, misleading, and it's misinformation, but it's also education on behalf of the physician. Yes. So have you seen that too?
So many questions there, so much to unpack there. One, there is a huge disconnect between what physical therapy or pelvic floor physical therapists do and what surgeons and doctors think we do. Like, there's a huge disconnect. I actually did a post yesterday just about the body in general. Surgeons are great at surgery, not so much at rehab. That's just, you know, the nature of the beast. We as physical therapists got to do a bit more to get ourselves out there and make ourselves relevant to both the surgeons, the doctors, and the patients. But yeah, I have had people come in and thinking that they're going to have to do this in cones and vaginal weights and things like that. So for those of you out there that don't know, a prolapse refers to when basically things on the inside are now on the outside. There's different degrees of that. There's different reasons for that. There's definitely a genetic component to that, where just people that tend to have a bit more laxity can be more prone to having that following pregnancy. And it could be right after delivery. It could be years later that you can see these patients coming in with this. There's different types of prolapses, where you can have kind of erectocele, you can have a cystocele, where basically you can have the bladder kind of coming outward. It could be the rectum coming outward. We could have the uterus descending. So different body parts, but either way, it's organs that are now descending. And our goal is to have them not descend so much. So one of the immediate go-tos is that we're going to, you know, stick some weights in there and make things stronger. But again, that's not necessarily the best starting point. One, a thorough exam is going to tell you where we should be starting. Two, again, we're looking at that pressurization. Three, getting inverted is actually really helpful, which makes sense. It's physics, kind of get things going the other way. There are more mechanical interventions. I shouldn't say solutions, but messical interventions, meaning pessaries, which is basically a way to help hold things up, which honestly, they are not the devil. There's a time and a place. It's kind of like talking about an orthotic. It's an orthotic for your pelvic floor, right? We talk about orthotics for your feet. I don't like them, but you know what? Sometimes they're necessary for a short term, just to unload things and help things to heal. So yes, have heard of that. People coming in and assuming that's what they're going to need. Is that my mainstay, my go-to to have them go and lift things and hold things and round and, you know, walk around with things? No. And for you folks out there listening, there is marketing in general is so much targeted at females and their and insecurities and trying to, you know, hold this up or tuck this in or cut that off. And we got to do our best to work, you know, get away from that because it's objectively wrong. If you're having pelvic floor dysfunction, pelvic floor issues, your first action should be to go see someone, not to stick something inside and zap yourself or try to walk around all day with these eggs or cones or things like that. Go see someone first and see what's appropriate.
The other thing about the pessary that you mentioned is, I've seen it for different things too, right? So I've seen it as like the end of PT, like, oh, well, PT didn't really work. Here's a pessary. Mm-hmm. Use this when you're wanting to do whatever activity is you can't get through right now. And then the other side of it is, hey, this is the beginning and we're going to get stronger. So use this for the short term. And then eventually we'll get to where you won't need it or you won't be symptomatic. So
yeah, two sides of that coin. And I like the that second coin a little bit better, the second side of the coin a little bit better, where it's not my first line, but ideally you can be, should be working with like a good Eurogyne. And this way that, you know, based on what the doctor's seeing, based on what you're seeing, you can make an objective decision and it'll be the type of thing like, hey, maybe this person does need this in the short term, but while we're doing other things. I really don't like it as something that's just given as an afterthought at the end, because it doesn't mean that the person has failed or that you failed or you've given up, but we don't know how that person's going to be using it. And there's other things that person could be doing to help manage symptoms as best they can even if that's what they need to do. They need to remember pessary. Okay. There's other things that they should still be doing. I'm not just depending on that thing for the rest of forever, because symptoms will get worse, right? It's the same thing with like wearing glasses, right? You always go back and then you need stronger glasses or you need stronger glasses and stronger glasses. That's going to be the same kind of thing that we're looking at with prolapses. So we want to get that person, if they are going to need that, let's get them the exercises, the drills, the proper bracing strategies, the proper positioning so that they're aware, the education so that they're aware so that things don't get worse. So I like that concept of not first line, but if that is looking kind of where things are looking, then there's someone on board, you know, there's because can you guys fit pessaries there? Like, meaning can you as physical therapists fit and place them? Is that a thing there?
No, okay. We can't. It's either like the OBs or the Eurogyne.
Exactly. So ideally, you know, you're working with a really, that's the biggest thing is this, we need that collaborative approach where you're working with a good Eurogyne, you're good working with a good OB and seeing where things are going and kind of determining the best fit and the best product and going from there. Because the flip side is that things take time to heal. And so you don't want to just jump in the beginning and assume like, yeah, this person needs this and then that's it. So ideally it's kind of the person goes to PT, they're working on our less, invasive, if you will, our less invasive, interventions. And then if that's decided that that's the route that's needed, okay, all parties agree. There's still information given. There's still advice given. There's still guidance that's given with it, not as an afterthought.
Yeah. I think that's a good, that's a good roundabout way of looking at it. So that's helpful.
So, I mean, it's tough. You know, I think that when you go into anything as a PT, as a new PT, you kind of like want everyone to get better and be amazing and be healed. And the fact of the matter is some people don't, right? And they don't, I don't know if we don't talk about it in school or it's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just, don't think about it, but like not everyone gets 100% better. That's just the nature of the beast. Like you think about your own body, like at least I know for me, my left knee, that was my ACL knee. Like it's not exactly the same as my other leg. Like it's good, but it's not 100% the exact same. Like never happened. And that's going to be the case for pelvic floor stuff too, where that person, ideally I would love for them to have no symptoms. Like it was like they never had a prolapse. It's like they never had urinary incontinence, anything like that. But That's not life. And sometimes their issues will flare up. We're dealing with a human, right? That's a dynamic system. And you may see that if that person gets sick, right, they get a cold, they're coughing a lot, they're under the weather, their symptoms kick up because that's the nature of the human body, especially if that person went for a long time without getting any kind of treatment and then finally found you. So I think it's not a bad idea, or rather, I think it's a good idea that, you know, we talk about this and you have it on the table and you realize that like, yeah, this may be something that needs to be utilized. And as such, we as practitioners and providers need to educate ourselves as best as we can so that we can help our patients out the most.
Yeah, that was very good. I saw the part on your website where it said soapbox. Yeah. So that was a good soapbox.
That was, you're right. Thank you. I was going to add that one in there. This is going on. You are right. Anything, we're hitting like the 50-minute mark. People don't like to listen that long. Anything else you want to chat about, discuss? This has been awesome, though. To tell you. I could talk about it forever.
I know. It's been really nice. I think for now, I'm solid. I think the only thing I was supposed to ask you, and Brandon wanted me to do this, was when are you going to come back to Colombia?
That gay. So I'm going to come back to Colombia probably next year when we have our new courses Unwrapped. So for those of you out there who don't know, I am a rock tape instructor. Like I said, I went out to Vertex to teach rock tape rock blades We just did the one day course there. But I'll probably look to go back there next year, 2019, because we are working on currently a new course, and I would love to bring that back out to you guys, and he can put me through some more BFR. And my legs fell off. I did like 2 reps and my legs fell off. So maybe next time I'll have a better showing. It was pretty pathetic. I was like, this is too hard. This is too much for me. Too hard. But yeah, this has been fantastic. Nothing else. I don't want to cut you off. No other questions. Everything else is good.
No, everything else is awesome.
Awesome. Well then, Ms. Tristan, I must say thank you beyond all thank yous for dealing with the technology and giving me an hour of your time. This has been awesome. And I know that it's going to be hugely, hugely beneficial to folks out there, whether they're new grads, whether they're thinking about transitioning to go into pelvic floor health, women's health, or whether they're just listeners that are maybe have their own pelvic floor issues, right? This is going to be an invaluable resource. So I thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I will likely have you on again. We'll do like a, where are they now? Fast forward a few months and you'll be treating male pelvic floor dysfunction. I'm certain of it.
Oh my God. In a couple months.
You know, a couple for me is like anything. That could be a year. That's still a couple. It's 12 months from now. And we'll see where you're at. I think big things in the future for you. Taking over the APTA, changing lives, doing big things. Again, where can folks find you? Because they're going to want to find you.
Well, probably email would be best, right?
Do you have a social media account? People like that too. If you don't, then email's fine.
I know, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know how to tell you what my social media account is. My Instagram is is TristanF10.
Someone that's TristanF10 on the Instagrams.
And then my email would be Tristan, so TRISTAN at Vertex, VERTXPT.com.
Awesome. So again, her information, I will put it in the show notes, but it is TristanF10. That's going to be Instagram. And her email is Tristan@Vertex.com. If you guys are in the South Carolina area and looking for a therapist, here you go. I just gave you one. They are hard to find. So I tell people, even if it's just one trip and at least an initial session so you can get some guidance, it is worth it, right? Your health is an investment, not an expense. Anything else before I shut us down, Ms. Tristan?
No, ma'am. I really appreciate you having me on here.
Well, thank you for the accent. Thank you for taking your time. Folks out there, until next time, thanks for tuning in. Maestro, out.